presentation was called Green Heating. And the goal of green heating is to use the least amount of fuel to heat a conditioned space. So like this room, you measured it, let's say if it had some outside, a house, you measure the rooms, and based on the outside walls and the windows, it gives off a certain amount of heat. And that is predictable how much heat it's going to give off based on the delta T, the difference in temperature. So the colder it is outside, it's going to give off more heat, and the warmer it's going to give off less heat. So by measuring this, you might figure out that this room gives off 15,000 BTUs with a delta T of about 60, or 70 indoor temperature. And about 10 degrees outdoor temperature. And usually when they design a system, they design it for that. So a typical house might give off 100,000 BTUs. And basically what this says is this is heating degree days times 24 hours. And so this down here is the gas that's used and the amount of fuel that's in the gas, the amount of energy that's in the gas. And the top part of this equation is the difference in temperature, you know, the outdoor heating degree days based on the sea. And this is the heat loss, you know, the energy being lost outside of the building. So if it's losing, good example is, let's say you have a delta T of 60 and it's losing 100,000 BTUs if it's 10 degrees outside. If it's 30 degrees outside, it's going to lose 66,000 BTUs. Does that kind of make sense to you? Because the delta T is only 40. So that's proportional. So what you have to do with the fuel is replace that. That's BTUs per hour, by the way. So when it's 10 degrees outside, you're adding 100,000 BTUs for the room. Now, because it's not 100% efficient, there's losses along the way. So you're probably going to add 200,000 BTUs of fuel at the burner, and going to so that you can replace 100,000 BTUs that's being lost throughout the house, out the envelope, if that makes sense. And that would be deemed to be 50% efficient. And with this equation, you can take what's happening and measure a house and the overall efficiency of it for, you want to do it for 6 months. Because over the winter, a system is more efficient than it is in the spring and the fall. Because basically, boilers are oversized in the spring and the fall. They tend to short cycle. So the efficiency is better in the winter. And also, for every 2 to 3 degrees you drop in water temperature, saves about 1% in fuel. So the water temperatures are more matched up with what you need in the winter versus the spring and the fall, where you're running higher water temperatures in the winter. So I think this plays a lot. But anyway, I've done field studies, and we found that the systems are more efficient in the winter, where they're burning fuel, less efficient. So you really want to do, like, compare the goals over a 6 month period from the summer to the winter. And, heating efficiency can further be broken down into three parts. So when you're trying to build, I started out racing cars. And so I broke cars down into five parts in order to make it go fast. You have driving the proper line around the track, you have aerodynamics, you have braking, you had acceleration, and then you had cornering. Those are the five different parts. So you break it down into five parts, and you try and, but all the parts have to work well together, too, to make the car go fast. So often you can add more horsepower to the car, and it'll go slow around the track. Why? Because you did tune the suspension to the horsepower that you added. So now the car's dragging in the corners. You just can't get all that acceleration down. You put the foot on the floor. You just can't get all that horsepower down onto the road, onto the surface, you know, transferred to the wheel. So it's a coordinated effort of how everything works together that happens. So fuel efficiency is the efficiency of the fuel you're using, and as a contractor like me, it's mostly just choice. You're going to choose to use electricity, you're going to choose to use oil, solar. Boiler side efficiency is the efficiency of the equipment in the boiler room. And coming off the boiler, there's the feed and the return pipes of hot water boilers. And by measuring the flow of the feed and the return, and then the delta T, the difference in temperature between it, that's what a BTU meter does. But right there is a cutoff between boiler side efficiency and system side efficiency. Boiler side efficiency, most of it is lost through the chimney or lost off the jacket, the equipment. And then system side efficiency, the losses are through crawl spaces. If you put UV emitters along the outside wall, the delta T between the backside of the heat emitter and the outside is high. Most of that energy is lost to the outside wall before it can come into the house. That would be a system side loss. So we break it into three different categories and try to figure out how to make it all work together as a package. Fuel efficiency. So this is a graph. This is from John Sigenthaler, professional engineer. And it talks about natural gas, LP, electricity. Electricity here, look on this chart, gives off more than three times as much CO2 as natural gas. Now, I mean, everyone's jumping on the electricity bandwagon. I mean, they're saying, we want to save the planet, we want to reduce CO2. Let's all go with the volt. After all, it's got, what, what's the gallons per 230 miles per gallon or something like that, they're climbing the volt. Yeah, well, they're just not measuring the electricity output. They're only measuring the gas output, and then they're saying it's 200. Well, you're idiots. They're not putting things into proper comparison. They're not converting the fuel, the electricity, and comparing it equally with what it is coming from the gas side. In fact, they're just saying it's zero and making it 230 miles per gallon. So, but anyway, so natural gas, more than three times less the amount of CO2. Now, why is that? That's because...
What's the NMBTU?
That's like million BTUs.
Oh, million?
Per million BTUs. It doesn't really matter what it is for this chart to work. I mean, it could be per 100 BTUs, per 1,000 BTUs. The shapes are going to look the same. Instead of 160, it might be 1,600 or 16. You know, you understand what I'm saying? But the proportions are always going to be the same. At the power plant, you're taking the coal, you're taking the natural gas, and then you have to convert that into electricity. And along the process, you're losing probably about 50% of the energy. Now, that's not my field, so I'm not going to get into the research of exactly what it is. I'm just taking a guess at around 50%. To turn the heat into the generation process, into the generator for electricity. And then probably another 50% over the transmission lines. So that by the time it gets to your house, you have a lot less energy than when you started.
How come electricity produces kilograms of CO2? Is it being created with something that's dirty? How do we know how the electricity is being made? You're not, like, burning wood to make it, right?
Well, this is a national average.
Oh, okay. So
everything's taken into effect, whether it be nuclear, coal, natural gas. Now, each state would probably have a different average than this. Someone told me in Connecticut, we fare better because we have more nuclear power than the national. So this number might be low in Connecticut. But this is based on a national average. If you need me to, I can get this where this came from. I mean, I got it from John Sigenthaler, but there was an association on the bottom. So I can find out where this came from. But
basically, electricity is the dirtiest fuel for heating. That's
for
what
anything.
Says.
For anything, yeah. For heating. Well, for heating, that's exactly. Or for the bolt, for that matter. Mm-hmm. If you're going to plug your bolt into the wall.
If you know that CO2 is bad, and you need to be global warming, why don't you just get some trees and plants, do a sandy soil stock, and get to the stairway and get their system working? You can convert the CO2 to O2, maybe not.
I think that's an excellent idea. They say that for every tree you plant, it offsets others like Jim Davis, who has concentrated on combustion efficiency, the efficiency of the combustion process within the burner. And this guy's a genius when it comes to that. So he's got even a more narrow focus than what I have. And he teaches it. And I'm certified for that. And for a while, all he was doing was just doing the order. But so narrow, it helps. It helps the country as a collective to have this narrow level of expertise, because then you put all these different pockets of intelligence together and you create a wonderful system. Electricity, cost-wise. We live in Connecticut. So in Connecticut, and I'm about the only one I know who did this. So I can't figure out why no one else is doing it. And I guess no one really cares to compare one fuel type to another. But in Connecticut, we're paying about $20 per kilowatt, and it comes out to about $6 per therm. A therm is about 100,000 BTUs per hour. Natural gas at about 161 per CCF. This was done 6 months ago, so it changes, so it might not be current. And this is for my house. Actually, the state average is about 17.55. So why am I paying more? Because I buy wind power. I'm buying clean energy. So they have to replace. When I buy wind power, they have to, whatever I use has to be replaced by wind or.
I do that as well, and the cost is about 1.3 cents, I think, per kilowatt. It's not really a profound effect.
I don't know, maybe I'm just going to get that. Or maybe just
no.
The area I live in.
I think I'm paying more than you are, so.
Oh, okay.
When you add in the transmission costs and all the other stuff, I've got 9 variables.
Long Island's higher than this, by the way, because Dr. Tom Butcher, who runs Brookhaven Laboratories, he's a friend of mine. He says they're paying more than this in Long Island. We're number 50 in the nation. Hawaii's worse than us. So at 17.55 on the national, on the state average, I think the national average is like 9 something. And it worked out to about 78% higher we're paying for electricity than the national average. And natural gas is about 26% higher than the national average. So that, when you're picking a fuel source to go with, these are some of the things you got to look at, some of the choices you have to make. Yes?
I have a question.
Sure.
I have a heat pump, which essentially is heat from the air. Using those numbers and pairs that they have, they give me 3 to 1.
Probably like 2 to 1. Air to air heat pumps are probably about 2 to 1.
I get 2 BTUs per kilowatt?
Yes.
Isn't that a function of outside temperature? And here, here's my bottom line. Outside on my heat pump compressor, I can dial it in. I got to believe it's more efficient at 50 degrees there than 40, 30, 20.
Oh, yes.
So where is that point? Where do I dial it in?
I'm hydronic.
Oh,
ground field. I have narrow expertise. That's what makes me so good at what I do.
I don't make it for that.
But, yeah, I would, yeah, there's adjustments you can make on those heat pumps to make them more or less efficient. I mean, the range is anywhere from 2 to, like, 5 for the coefficients. And, of course, ground source is going to do better than air to air. So, heating oil, now propane, is an extra process. It takes an extra process to make propane. So I've been told that propane is always going to be higher than like heating oil or natural gas because of that. Because it's an extra manufacturing process or extra stuff. So you can kind of find particulate emissions. This is particulates is, this really doesn't have a whole lot to do with CO2, but have you ever, like, walked down the street and smelled somebody's wood fireplace burning? You know, this guy's burning wood. You're probably smelling the particulates in the air. And CO2 is like a gas or molecule, because the particulates is like little glass floating in the atmosphere. And that's not very good for you to breathe. And Dr. Tom Butcher is pretty concerned about it, and that's why he doesn't like working. And so this is from this slide from Brookhaven Laboratories. And he's trying to get people to stop burning wood. I mean, it's fine one house at a time, but if a whole community decides to do it, it can be a problem. In fact, they've had to ban wood because of, whole communities have gotten into it big time, and the pollution is so severe they had to ban wood. Here's another. This is like an outdoor wood boiler, conventional wood stove. This dot is gas. It's for fine particulates. And oil is a little bigger dot. There's still all gas and oil. Solar. Free energy. This is an oven truck evacuated to solar panel. 16 tubes. This would do roughly about 70% of the domestic hot water load, or the bathing water, for a house. That panel there.
So it's a what kind of panel?
Solar thermal.
Oven truck?
Oven truck is the name of the manufacturer. Yes, there's water that runs through here, through the top, and the bottom, through the manifold. This is different. There's another liquid in this panel, in this tube. I'm not exactly how, it looks like a big vacuum tube. And some, through conduction, the manifold is touching this nipple, and then there's heat transfer going on with the liquid just in itself. You can actually pull out the whole tube and put it back.
The center, the core of each one of those is the heat pipe, and it's just mechanically helping for the head running through.
Yes, so you're not going to get a leak because the water runs through. And then there's like storage tanks in the basement that transfers the heat into the heating system.
How big is the storage tank?
Probably about 80 gallons, maybe, I think, for a typical house. That can vary. This is for this climate, 70% for this climate. I've done the numbers and the math.
And this is where you can get up 70%
south. It's not the house, it's the panels that have to be facing south.
So you can test the mountain.
Yeah, you could. If you have an east facing house and the panels are kind of like this, you just kind of tilt them like that.
Well, cost of course.
Yes, it does go up if you have to. It's much better if you south face. Yeah, you have to have the right location. Trees also can be a problem. Trees are covering it. It's an excellent fuel source. Free. And you can put that into the overall efficiency calculation too. Because 70% is free, the other 30% is paying for fuel. You end up with 300% efficient if you want to look at it that way. That's usually how it's calculated out. If you're going to try and compare it to other heating systems or style of heating systems. Just as geothermal, which is from the ground. Now, the coefficients are very high. It's a very good system, super efficient. They measure coefficients of like 2 to 5. 2 meaning 200% efficient, 5 meaning 500% efficient, depending upon the system that you have installed. If you live down south, like in Florida, where the cooling bills are much higher than they are up here, it makes a lot of sense. It's definitely the way to go. Also, where you're paying $5 per kilowatt hour, like some other parts of the country, even up north, because the price of electricity is so low, this makes a lot of sense. But when you start looking that we're paying, roughly almost 4 times as much for a unit of electricity versus natural gas. Now, what's 1/4 times, 4? Because if you have, you're talking about, because natural gas is 1/4 with electricity, 1/4 times 10. So if you stick in an electrical system, that's got a coefficient of 4, 400% efficient. Just go back to 1, back to where you started from. So you're used at the same as if you just stuck the natural, if you dug all these holes into the ground, and you have the same amount of energy as if you just stuck the natural gas pipe coming into your house. And that's one thing to remember. Not everyone's all high-end geothermal. Done this math. Huh? You looked at, don't go by simulation studies and stuff like that, because AFUE, which is what the government put out 30 years ago, average fuel utilization efficiency, is all backwards. Totally. They test all the boilers at 1 water temperature. Yet for every 2 to 3 degrees, you drop in water temperature, you save 1% in efficiency. So, you can do like a modulating condenser boiler. So, John, why don't they take two natural gas, drive a ground loop, combine heat and power, huh? Why don't they use natural gas, heat and source of power, to run a ground system?
Well,
I've asked that question, and the compressors aren't very efficient. And I've talked to many different geothermal guys about that. Currently, no one's doing it around here. So, the biggest problem I have as a contractor is I can't get parts for it if it's federal or any system. So, I don't want to get involved in anything I can't get parts for.
Geothermal, then, somebody around?
Not doing gas power.
Oh, gas power.
Gas power compressors. You probably have to special order it. And what I've been told is they're not very efficient, gas power compressors. But that's a very good point. Why don't they do gas power compressors rather than electric?
Let the gas power be burning it. They need to drive a coil absorption system.
Are you trying to pump heat out of the ground and into the house, or out of the house and into the ground? Are you air conditioning or heating?
My intent is to use natural gas, natural system, to go heat from the ground, make it out.
Why can't you just burn the gas?
Make heat.
Isn't that more efficient?
The whole key is for every BTU of natural gas, get, let's say, 3 or 4 BTUs out of the ground. That's the whole deal.
Well, that's what geothermal is.
Right.
Well, just use an efficient geothermal compressor to solve your problem.
No.
Natural gas compressor. Efficient natural gas compressor should solve that problem. You know? But I guess one of the problems is, for probably 3/4 of the country, geothermal makes sense with electrical. Only maybe in the Northeast it doesn't make sense. So that's one of the problems right there. And this is combined heat and power. This is a pretty good technology. Basically what it is you have a generator in here, and generators produce heat, and they need to be cooled. So you cool them with the heating system. Provides heat for the building, cooling the generator, making it more efficient. That's what this is. The downside to this is they both need to be running equally at the same time. So the loads don't quite match up, electricity, heating. Some commercial applications, it makes a lot of sense, but not really residential yet. I've looked into it. It's not quite there yet. Maybe it will be. Okay, now we'll get into boiler side efficiency. This is the efficiency of the equipment in the boiler. And, you know, again, you have your feed in your return pipes. Put a flow meter in here. Probably right about here. And most of the energy is being lost out of the smoke pipe. This is a modulating condensing boiler. Runs really low water temperatures. This is an outdoor reset control. Measures the outside temperature. And it runs the water temperature in proportion to whatever the outdoor temperature is. So if it's a warm day out, you don't need as hot of water as you do if it's February. That's what outdoor reset does. It allows you to run like in the spring and the fall. Cooler water temperatures and hotter in the winter. And also does other things. guy had electric. It's fuel savings. It's huge. Tremendous. That's the giant. So he had electric basically. Dr. Tom Butcher. Tom Dirk and PE. He's not a doctor. Thinking one person and saying it better. He did a study on 10 schools where he took out the existing boiler, put in a modulating condensing boiler, cut the fuel bills in half. His average is 49% in each individual school, 52, 42, 56. These are the savings. This is what he did. What he converted from steam to hot water and then put in the modulating condensing boilers, cut the fuel bills by 68%. That's more than three times less. I'm not quite sure what the fuel was on these. I don't think No, these are gas. I think they're condensing boilers and they're off of gas, yes. Gas-fired hydronic systems.
John, could you educate us for 2 seconds? What's a modulating condenser boil?
Okay. Modulating, one of the things, short cycles really kills the efficiency on a boiler, so in order to lengthen the cycle, you want to modify the fuel in them, so that the fuel, so that you have less fuel and less air mixture. That's a modulating burn. You can only do that by direct venting. You have to take outside air in and inside air out, because you need a fan to control the airflow. That's the only way, because you got to get the air mixture and the fuel mixture have to match up. So by doing this, you have turndown ratios. You can run 10,000 BTUs per hour out of the boiler, or you can run 100,000 BTUs per hour out of the boiler. So that's a lot more efficient when you can do that. Condensing means that when you get the stack temperature, the fuel temperature is low enough, and the water temperature low enough, like the water temperature is lower, 135 degrees, what happens is the fuel gases start to condense. It forms this water droplet. It's very acidic. And it falls back towards the boiler. And the boiler recovers the heat from the water droplets. And what you end up getting is a double whammy. The amount of savings accelerates. Not only are you saving money by reducing the fuel, the water temperature, you're saving money by capturing the heat from the condensate. The more condensate, the more money you save. So if you're dropping in water temperature from, let's say, 160 to 150, you're going to save a certain amount of fuel and energy. The percentage will be 5%. I'm just throwing that off the top of my head. But if you drop from, let's say, 120 to 110 degrees in water temperature, you're going to get double the savings, like maybe 10%. So if it's 5% from 150 to 140, it's probably more like 2% from 150 to 140. It would be from 120 to 110, it would be like 4%. It would be double that. Because you're also collecting it from the condensation. That's where hooking it up to a low-temperature radiant heating system, I can design systems for like 110 degrees. You'll really take advantage of these boilers. And these boilers are rated by our government under AFUE. All tested at one water temperature. It's not even tested in the conventional boilers. And the conventional boilers are tested lower than what they run at. A typical conventional boiler will run at 180, and the manufacturer says you're not allowed to run at less than 140 because it might condense and ruin the boiler. See, the condensate is highly acidic, so that could ruin the boiler. So, but these boilers are meant to run really, really low, so they can take advantage of that huge fuel savings. So, basically what I'm saying, this project here, that can mount on the wall.
That little one.
Yeah, that covers the whole house. They're also very small. They don't have almost no... Another problem is standby locks. That when this boiler's off, it's losing heat outside the building. That's a big problem. By having small water content in the boiler, you tremendously reduce standby. So, that's why I like... this one has a stainless steel heat exchanger, and it has less surface area than an aluminum heat exchanger. A lot less surface area. So because of this less surface area, it also has less water content in it. And, I mean, it can, go from top temperature to low temperature just just like that. It is pretty fast. Yes.
This is pretty much strictly a gas-powered system.
This one's gas, yes.
But you probably, I would guess, this is not my field, but you probably would not do the modulated condensing boiler with an oil system?
You could do it with oil. Oil doesn't condense at probably about 120 degrees or so. And so you don't take advantage of that condensing mode until much lower water temperature.
So
and
you could use that kind of control.
The burner technology is not advanced enough to modulate. They do have two-step burners. They do two speeds, slow and high. But they really haven't perfected it well enough. So this study here, with the 49% savings, was based on, they did not change the heat emitters in the building. The heat emitters were designed for 180 degrees. What Tom Durkin did is he set the curve for 150 based on like a 60 degree delta T, which is typical. So they were based on 180 degree water and a 60 degree delta T, which is, you know, 10 degrees outside, 70 degrees inside. And that's, so he set the curve in the outdoor reset control to 150. So then the rest of the time, based on the outdoor temperature, it ran lower than that. And he was in the condensing mode for more than 90% of the time, because it's under 135 degrees more than like 90% of the time. So that's how he was able, one of the reasons he was able to save it. Now, you hook this up to a low temperature radiant heating system at 110 degrees, I mean, you're like condensing all the time. Going to beat the savings. Like this. Five ways to save energy on the boiler side. Lower the water temperature. Recover the heat from the condensate. Less standby losses. So you don't want to lose the heat up the chimney when the boiler's off. Reduce short cycling. Boiler turning on and off all the time. Kills efficiency. And tune the combustion for lower stack temperature and oxygen content in the flue gas. So I have a combustion analyzer that measures oxygen, stack temperature, carbon, carbon monoxide levels, and carbon dioxide levels. So carbon, one sensor gives you both carbon dioxide and oxygen. Depends one or the other. Yeah. If you have more oxygen, you have less carbon dioxide. If you have more carbon dioxide, you have less oxygen. The relationship's always easy. Okay. So, tune it for lower stack temperature and lower oxygen content. Now, and the trick is, as you lower the oxygen content, reducing excess air, and the stack temperature goes up. So, but a good example is, let's say you had a stack temperature of about 400 degrees and oxygen content in the flue gas of about 6%. You lowered it to 4%, you might get 500 degrees stack temperature. But you increase the efficiency of the unit even though the stack temperature went up. So then you stick some brushes in the boiler and you clean out the boiler, increasing the heat transfer. So now the heat transfer in the boiler is better because of the soot, because the soot was acting as an insulator. So now once you remove the soot, the heat transfer goes up and the stack temperature drops. Oxygen content stays the same. So that's kind of like how you tune a boiler. But that's the tuning it for the proper. And that's where Jim Davis is an expert. He teaches combustion analysis. And he was a burner boiler tuner for years. They used to follow him up through an energy audit. So he would get paid for the amount of money he saved his clients in energy. And they're mostly big industrial companies, commercial companies. And that he didn't change the controls, he just tuned them. And now he teaches it. In fact, I'm trying to hook him up with Dr. Tom Butcher, because Badaris came out with a new boiler that has a blue flame in it. And they're claiming very high efficiency, but I called Jim Davis up and asked him what he thought of it. And he said they're doing the efficiency calculation. He figured this out, you know, by energy auditors measuring in the field. And the blue flame burners were about 10 to 25% less efficient than the yellow flame burners were. So I called up Dr. Tom Butcher. Dr. Tom Butcher runs, he's in charge of Energy Efficiency Buildings Division at Brookhaven Laboratories. pumps, because a long time ago, back in the 70s and the 60s, when they invented the calculation, all they had was yellow flame burners. So some scientists came along and he said, look, we're figuring out this guy. We don't need to worry about flame temperature. It's all the same. Every burner is roughly the same. So why do we need to put it in the calculation? So they left it out of the calculation. And then 30 years goes by and everyone's measuring the efficiency of flutters the same way. But no one looks at the relationship between the temperature of the flame and the stack temperature. Because that, according to Jim Davis, that affects the efficiency of the burner, the efficiency of the boiler. So, because of blue flame, is now they invented the blue flame burners, and they're measuring them with the same old combustion formula that they had developed way back then. So this is what I'm doing. You got Jim Davis, who's in the field, and he's relying on energy auditors measuring boilers in the field based on heating degree day, before and after comparisons, or, you know, similar to that. And he's found that they were not as efficient. Then he went in and did some research to figure out what happened, and he found the answer. I'm still waiting for Dr. Tom Butcher to confirm it. So, what I want is somebody to confirm that Jim Davis is right. Because Jim Davis is not a scientist, so he's teaching this and he's in the field. But if he confirms this, you know, for now, I'm not putting any blue flame burners. But that, go ahead.
Blue flame is that hotter or colder than hot?
Colder.
It's colder.
Yes.
Okay. So, if you have a different flame, how does that affect the heat and mass balance?
Well, think about it. The lower the stack temperature, the more money you save in fuel. So if you have yellow flame that's burning at like 4,000 degrees, and I can't remember what it's supposed to burn, anyway, let's say, I'd have to look it up, I'm sure I could figure it out, but I did, I just said it as an example, and it's burning at 4,000 degrees and has a stack temperature of 400, and you have another flame that's burning at 3,000 degrees with a stack temperature of 300, wouldn't it kind of make sense that if they're using the same amount of fuel, that because one has a 3,000 degree flame temperature, it would have a lower stack temperature? Doesn't that, it just kind of, it makes sense to me. So I tend to believe Jim Davis, but I'm going to wait until Dr. Tom Butcher comes back and either confirms it. But we can confirm it pretty easily with an experiment. All you have to do is put a flow meter on the oil burner, and then put a BTU meter coming off the boiler, and just test it. Test the yellow flame burners, and I'll put in a blue flame burner, and you know. This is more efficient, because that's going to give you what the boiler side efficiency is. That's how you measure boiler side efficiency. Now, that's all we really care about when we're measuring this burner. So I'm going to try and talk Dr. Tom Butcher into doing that experiment. You can probably get NYSERDA to pay for it, because they're paying for a lot of stuff these days. Go ahead.
You just said oil. You're actually meant to say gas, right?
No, oil. Oil.
So
I installed both oil and gas.
Okay. So the yellow and blue burners are referring to the oil burner, not a
gas
burner.
Oil burner. This could be a worldwide problem, too. In other words, they're running blue flame burners in Germany, and they're not measuring the flame temperature over there either. Could be a huge breakthrough.
It just seems that if you, this is just a simple problem of a heat gun. Regardless of whatever temperature you have there, you've got so much heat coming out of the exhaust, right? That's in part. You know how much heat is going in? The whole point is what is the value of knowing what the flame temperature is when the real value of the whole field is how much is it costing to heat my house?
Well, exactly. So that's why do you think I came up with efficiency? But that's not how they do things. They have a combustion efficiency formula that they developed in the old days, measuring stack temperature and oxygen. And all kinds of other good things. And, or bad things, could be put in. Ancient things. Measuring all kinds of ancient things, and that's what they go by. They don't hook up the BTU meters and the flow meters. I mean, Dr. Tom Butcher does not. In fact, he'll tell you if you use six. He's trying to get them to replace it. And ASHRAE even came up with a standard that's better, and he did a test on it in his laboratory, and he likes it a lot. But he can't get the rest of the government to agree to change the Feral AFPE yet. So it takes a while. Go ahead.
To compute the number of BTUs lost, you need both the stack temperature and the volume of air that's being emitted by the boiler. That is the exhaust gas. Because knowing just the temperature at the stack is not sufficient. You need to know the total amount of volume that goes through it, right? It's like knowing voltage and not knowing current.
Well,
the
burners are fixed, so they figure when they're doing their combustion tests, they figure that the burner's putting out 100,000 BTUs of fuel, or certain fuel weight, and they don't measure the air value. There's a German test called the Heinsfeld, or something like that, where they are measuring the velocity of the air, so they're probably getting into volume. But that's over in Germany. Dr. Tom Butcher translated some of it, and he's trying to get that. Hopefully that helps improve it. But I don't think they're measuring volume over here in their combustion efficiency. They're really in the dark ages. These guys are clueless. And I'm just a repeating contract. It isn't like computers. The biggest problem is just not enough guys working in the field. That's what it comes down to. Yeah. After we installed radiant chlorine and several, this is like a sales thing. After we installed radiant floor heating in summer rooms, even on the coldest days, you can stand anywhere in the room in the warm environment. And with our indirect water heater, we never run out of hot water. Just as important, our hydronic system has cut our fuel heating bills by 30%. I left the existing boiler. I think he had a coil, so I put in this indirect in, put in the computerized outdoor reset control, repiped and rewired the system. About 37 fuel. And then with radiant heating, it's about 3 or 4 rooms. Yeah. So maybe about half the first floor was radiant, the other half baseboard, and the second floor baseboard.
You say 30%. What did he have originally?
Baseboard throughout the house.
Oh, baseboard throughout the house.
Hooked up to this boiler. One of the problems with this boiler is it was running a coil off of this boiler. So it was maintaining temperature in the middle of the summer. This boiler's hot all the time. You have this big flue pipe running right through the middle of the boiler, and when this boiler's off, there's hot air that rises and heats up as it rises through the boiler. It gets hot, and it goes up the chimney. So even when this boiler's off in the middle of summer and not making hot, bathing hot water, it's still rising up the chimney and losing a ton of heat. So it's just a really bad design. Plus, it's got this old computerized control on it that's like bang, bang, on, off. There's no computer chip. I mean, that's the way they did it in the 80s, 90s. Now, you can use these computerized controls to do a lot better job.
So what are you doing? Are you modulating it?
Of course, none of this would qualify for any kind of tax credits. Because this is all, the government doesn't even have a freaking clue as to what the hell I'm talking about right now. Or at least the people in it. I shouldn't say everybody. Dr. Tom Butcher is very smart. I've learned a lot from him. He's a good guy. But even he says a lot of his bosses. He's not getting where he wants to go. They're not even. The DOE's not even funding it. I mean, he has to get funding from NYSERDA, National Oil Heaters Association, Manufacturing Space Equipment. They're fun developing geothermal. They're fun developing solar. I mean, all that stuff's great, but they won't fund Dr. Tom Butcher in developing energy efficiency and heating systems. So he's really tremendously underfunded. And he's got a lot for what he's got, He's gone pretty far for what he has. These are some boilers.
What are those? Those are boilers?
Yeah. is, you know, this is just a baseboard system with a outdoor reset control replacing the old boiler. That's about 30% fuel savings there. But it's not as sophisticated as the pipe even wiring of this one was. It's more simplistic. But you're getting the savings by the German boiler. This it's a Badaris boiler. It's a German boiler. This is oil-fired equipment, by the way. But this can take lower return water temperatures than a lot of American counterparts.
What makes the Badaris sufficient?
Well,
you have multi-pass?
Three-pass boiler. It can take lower return water temperatures. So I can run the outdoor reset control. I can put the set the curve, the bottom line of the curve lower.
So it's a condensing boiler.
Yeah. Also, they don't insulate their fire boxes. They have silicone that they mix in with the cast iron. And the silicone makes this cast iron more flexible. They can fire directly right against the cast iron. So a fire box is like an insulation material so that you don't crack the cast iron when you fire into it. But why would you want to fire into an insulation material? I mean, how efficient is that? When you're trying to transfer as much heat from the flame to the cast iron as you can, it only makes sense to directly fire against it, right? So, I mean, I think that's... And they heavily insulate the boiler. While the American manufacturers likely insulate the boiler, because AFUE goes up. AFUE doesn't count for jacket losses. So, by lightly insulating the boiler, it lowers the stack temperatures. The losses that go into the room, that lowers the stack temperatures and makes AFUE go up. So they think they're actually doing some good in the back. Because the Europeans are a little bit smarter. They insulate their...
Are you also feeding the domestic hot water with that boiler or not?
Yes, this is a... Domestic hot water tank, there's a coil inside it,
it's a
heat exchanger, and so it heats transfers from there.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's the cost of those $2 to American?
Not that much. 10-20% more for the pipe.
Where
the expense comes in is when I install a system, it's designed. So, see this air eliminator? The best place to remove air is at the highest temperature and lowest pressure point. So you want to pump away from the air eliminator, and you also want to put the pumps on the feed side of the boiler. So this is the hottest water, and then this is the lowest pressure point, the best place to put this. And then this is also the point of no pressure change, is right here. The point of no pressure change means that if you stick your feed valve in there, it's always going to be 12. Whether what happens with the pumps, if the pumps come on, it's always 12 pounds here. So the pump is going to add pressure to this side, making this 14. And then it's going to go from 4, then it's on this side, let's give it a 4 psi pressure differential. So if it's got a 4, let's say this pump creates a 4 psi pressure differential, it would be 12 here and 16 here, or maybe 17 here, 13 here, and it's gradually go down to 12 here. And then it'd be 12 over here and go all the way up to 17 and it gets back down. It would be like 17, 13. That's probably what it looks like. Stay, I think it is stay open or stay closed, they have to be powered to stay open. So you're using energy to keep the freaking thing open. But there are more efficient zone valves that you can get that aren't spring-loaded. Or it makes sense to use one pump. This is a residential application. You know, you're going down, you're doing this in a day. Go down to a supply house and say, give me some zone valve pumps. You know, you can't special order that. But, I mean, yeah, you can get some really efficient zone valves. This one, first place retrofit, the system showcase award for the Indiana Association 2004. I guess one of the reasons why we won is we designed this cabinet to put it in. So that was kind of unique. Want this to stand out. This is 2005, this project won Best in Show, the highest points total in the history of competition. And that really gave me a big ego. I don't know if it did me any good, because sometimes I'm a little conceited. I think I'm smarter than what I really am. But that hurts me when I'm trying to sell systems. But
what is this for?
This is a Radiant. This is an apartment building, Grove Street Plaza. 8 apartments, all Radiant heated. And each one of these pumps is an apartment, with one being the entryway. On the other side are air handlers and the melting pot. This is not really designed by me. This is designed by me at Radiant Center. This is like specified by some engineer who did the melting pot. But it's all laid out. Fred does all the layouts. And I submitted my own control wiring diagram and mechanical diagram for the patents. And in the commercial category, a lot of them have PDs of the diagram. So I was pretty pleased with myself that I beat up PDs. And the contest has been going on for over 10 years. I mean, I was never valedictorian in school or considered to be super smart. So, I never won best athlete or anything. So this is like my life's, big life's achievement. And then now, I'm for the same project. Right, this commercial project here, I'm designing a solar thermal system with 14 panels, that's what I announced before I came in here. And it's also going to have one storage tank so that when the panels aren't doing the domestic hot water, well, they can dump some of the load into the radiant heating system. So it's both hydronic heating and solar.
And how big is that storage tank?
That, for that system, there's a 400-gallon, it requires a 400-gallon tank. There are two existing 75-gallon tanks on the job. Let me see. The 400-gallon tank is required for the domestic hot water. And then another 275-gallon tank required for the radiant heating. So we're going to add two tanks. But the 400-gallon tank, we can't fit through the doors. So we're going to do two 200-gallon tanks. It's going to have, we're adding three tanks to it, two tanks that exist. I guess I don't have pictures of the tanks here. Okay. But this is what exists there. They have two indirect tanks, two boilers to the apartment. But I learned to do this. My philosophy from auto racing, I developed a phrase that I lived by. I developed it from my days in auto racing. It was, the phrase is, who you learn from the facts. I learned that quick in auto racing. Because if you went and asked a slow guy what was the best way to get around the track, he'd give you the wrong information and you'd be slow like him. So it wasn't long before I'm using my stopwatch to figure out who are the fastest guys around the track, and then I would try and learn from them. So I quickly figured out it was really important who you learn from. You didn't learn from the best, or else you'd be just going backwards in your knowledge. And I've kind of used that philosophy Jim Davis is the best in combustion efficiency. I'm learning from him. Dr. Butcher at Brookhaven Laboratories. He's in energy efficiency buildings. He's got a lot of knowledge there, and he's the best at what he does. Mike Miller does all the technical diagrams for Techmar Controls. And I became really good friends with him, and I learned a lot from him. He and I went down in New York City together. One time he took me out to spend the day in the city together, and we went down for a seminar in New York City. But he lives in Canada. He's in, like, the other side. But I go to a lot of seminars, a lot of trade shows. And so I see him maybe a couple times a year over the course of the last 10 years, so we've become friends. And a lot of these hydronic specialists, guys like Jim Davis, I see them every once in a while. Because they seem to go to the same trade shows and the same seminars. Okay, system side efficiency. Yes. That's once you... Now, there's also a lot of losses that's going on that's ignored. System side is really ignored. I mean, that's almost totally ignored. And we figure if you just ignore it, it doesn't exist, right? I mean, that's, well, at least that's the way people in this country seem to think about it. This duct gives off 16 times more heat, more energy per surface area than this little pipe does. Because this pipe carries 16 times more energy than this duct. So this shows you how if you're transferring heat from one place to another, it's more efficient to transfer through this pipe than through this duct. That's system side losses. If we don't even bother to go into a meter mass. Where those pipes, that's not, if they are in a crawl space, they're in an end. What about this situation? This is typically the way they build houses, like in the 80s and 90s of today. It's insulated underneath here. The rafters above in the attic are uninsulated. And then on top of that, the carpenters say, if you don't ventilate the attic, it's going to get moist and destroy the wood. So they ventilate the attic on top of it. The entire heating units up here. It's all 100% up here, all the ducts up here, everything. And it's all insulated underneath, not above. The system side losses of that are tremendous. No one's measuring it, no one knows. No one's aware of it. Best ways to save energy in the system side. Lower the water temperature. Why lower the water temperature? Well, let's say you're hooking this pipe to a radiant heating emitter in the room. And let's say that radiant heating emitter is putting out 110 degrees of water temperature. At 110 degrees per foot, this pipe will give off less energy than it would at 180 degrees per foot. So if you can lower the design temperature of the heat emitters, you're going to lower the losses on the system side in unconditioned spaces. So that's
not a direct function of DC, but a delta T.
Yeah. I guess so. So lower the water temperature. Run smaller distribution pipes. Do not run pipes in unconditioned spaces. This is one, I'm probably the only one who talks about this. Put your heat emitters on the inside walls. Why does everyone put their heat emitters on the outside wall? So they don't, here's a window, let's put it underneath here. They go by the window, I'm cold here, let's put the heat here. How efficient is that? Because the delta T behind that heat emitter, that's very hot. A lot of that energy is going directly outside the outside wall. So that's something to think about. So I don't, reluctant to design that way because of the comfort issues. There needs to be a little bit more explored. Because part of the systems I sell are comfort related. A lot of my clients are high-end clients because radiant heating costs about twice as much as, say, hot air. So comfort comes first for them, probably more so than efficiency does. So I'm going to be a little bit careful about coming into these heat emitters. Yes, the insulating plates. If they're near an outside wall, case, you've got to look at how you want to classify the basement. In my house, my pipes in the basement are uninsulated. Well, the temperature of my basement went from maybe 60 to 65 in the winter, so I'm satisfied with that. I walk down in the basement, my wife wants to wash clothes. You know, she likes that. You know, so you really have to look at the temperature of the basement. But in that particular case, rather than putting baseboard heat around the basement, the bare pipes are giving off heat. So it kind of makes sense. So yes, it is losing heat to the basement. Yes, it's inefficient that the basement would be classified in that case as a conditioned space if you want to use. If you run the pipe in the middle of the house, you don't need to insulate it because it's just going to give us AC to the room. But if you run it in an outside wall, it's going to be insulated. Turn down the thermostat. Of course, that's lower delta T between outside temperature and inside temperature. But that also comes with the caveat. If you have an outdoor reset control, you're running really low water temperatures, you may have to bump up the water temperature in the morning to come out of to bring the house up to temperature if you're resetting it at night, if you do day-night setback. So there can be cases where you're not really getting the savings you should. But most of the systems are running with 180 degree water and are way higher water temperatures than what they really need to be. So this rule pretty much applies for most everything. Oh, if you want to save energy in your boiler, the best way to do it is just take that screwdriver and turn down the air conditioner. Turn down the water temperature. You unscrew. But don't get electrocuted. Hire electricians to do it.
For you electrical engineers, you probably know enough about electricity to handle that.
But I can't tell you to do that, because then if you don't do it, you electrocute yourself and come back and see. Huh? Yeah, then your family does. It's worse yet. Especially if you're the breadwinner. Then I really get screwed. So, balance the room temperatures. That's also a big problem. A lot of times, like in the old big apartment buildings, their idea of balancing room temperatures is opening up the window in the room that's way in the apartment that's way too hot. And that produces a lot of heat. So. Where was I? European style hydronics. Now this gets more into marketing. I'm trying to sell heating systems here. In Europe, essentially 100, but this also, this particular slide is something food for thought, but after this I get into a lot of marketing. In Europe, essentially 100% of home heating systems are hydronic. Advantages reported for hydronic systems include comfort, reduced electric power consumption, air elimination of energy losses associated with distribution systems. Duct losses can reach 30 to 40%. This is quoted by Dr. Tom Butcher. So he agrees with me. The duct losses in unconditioned spaces and how important that is to look at. So, some people see, people like Dr. Tom Butcher are smart in Chicago. Do we have any lawyers here?
No.
90% of our politicians are lawyers. Okay. Lawyers learn by this is the way I see things. I don't know if I'm right. Lawyers learn by memorization. They get a book. They learn in the book. It says A plus B equals C. It says, if this slide is, they give you a set of rules. And it's not whether it's right or wrong or whether it's reality. It's just how it is in the book that counts. You're going to win in court whether how you interpret that book. And that's how they live their lives. They're really good at memorizing. It's one form of intelligence. And they make up like 90% of our politicians. But it doesn't mix with engineering because in engineering, the rules change all the time. I mean, as the technology advances, you got to change the rules. If you want to advance and get smarter. I mean, I don't know if that makes sense, but I think one of the problems with the government is I don't think the lawyers understand that you need to be changing the rules surrounding technology. So they hold on to the old rules a little bit too steadfastly. Yes.
How about if I tell you a little bit of my book?
draft going through that chimney, and the efficiency is really dependent upon that and how well you can tune the draft in the chimney. It's probably more important than what you think outside air.
I'm saying
I don't know if it's...
Are you be interested in knowing what happens?
No, I don't think it's going to make much of a difference in also,
it's not a big deal for me to try it, so, you know, it would probably take, you know, a couple of weekends to do it.
Well, they have systems that do it, phantom cans, and they have systems that...
Yeah, I can buy a damper, motorized damper that runs...
They have kits,
yeah,
you can just
right.
buy a kit, and it hooks right up to the burner, so the fan comes on, and the burner comes on, and it sucks out there, and they're in. They have a kit. Some people do it. But, like I said, it's all dependent upon what the reading is of your combustion meter. So, and it's dependent upon what they set the fan speed is at, and when they start sucking the outside air in and trying to get it into the burner. Or, you know, it comes down to what the draft numbers are. If the draft, if you do this and the draft numbers are not as good as that doing it, then your combustion analyzer will tell you whether it's going to work. There's only that chimney has a certain sweet spot of a draft moving through, and you can't speed that up or slow that down. It's natural.
Right.
So there's a sweet spot of a fuel air efficiency.
I don't doubt that, and that's what I'm saying is if the outside air temperature is varying depending on the season or whatever, the efficiency of the whole system would probably also vary all over the place. I would expect.
Cold air versus hot air, like
yeah. You know, let's say it's really cold outside.
Well, maybe that's the reason why it's better to use room air, because you can tune it to that sweet spot. Let's put it this way: Jim Davis, who teaches combustion analysis, isn't recommending it. He isn't like red flagging it. He's not saying don't do it. He's not saying do it. He hasn't. And he's pretty smart. He's smarter than I am in that area. And, you know, so but on a modulating condensing boiler, it's imperative. But then you have a fan and it's going.
I don't mean to be the cuckoo clock, but it's already 8:30, so I don't know. You have an invention that you want to present, right?
The invention is the formula. I have a patent on the very opening slide. Go back. I developed this formula with Bob DeStefano because he understands mathematical formulas better than I do, and because of the college education that he has, for one thing. So I kind of came up with the formula in my head, and he got it down onto paper to make sense of it, and put it like into a more organized fashion. And I have a patent on the use of that formula in software to calculate the efficiency. The Green Building Council is now starting to collect fuel usage data, and they're also collecting heat loss, I would imagine. I don't know if they recognize it or not, but they're collecting the information I need to take this and plug it into software to figure out the overall efficiency of the building. So I see a bright future. I think we're going to start to build the field data. We're going to field information to come out and start to see trends. I have a whole project, a paper I wrote on this, and I think my paper is going to have the possibility of coming true. I talked to them down there. Basically what they said is they're taking field data on the bigger buildings, and so they have a lot of in bigger buildings like this, they have a lot of electric light usage and such, and a lot of BTUs is coming from that to skew the heat loss factor. But houses, not so much. It matches up more, to make a long story short, it matches up better with houses versus bigger buildings.
So, John, this is your invention. This is your plan.
Yeah.
strange thing about this is I developed it on my own. But when I developed it, I had some people tell me that they've used the formula. Well, I don't have my patent on it.
But no, if they say that you can get a patent on yours, but it's in Firefox.
I disclosed all the Firefox. I didn't hide anything.
If someone said that they have used it in Firefox after you use
it. No, they haven't used it in software. Larry Drake said that they've tested some houses in the past, but they really didn't do anything extensive like what I want.
Okay, what exactly do you say? So you have to
test it. You can't patent a formula. So this formula itself is not patented. The formula is used in a patent for that. And it's basically,
what is heat loss?
Oh, heat loss is, BTUs going out of the like in a house? Well, okay, there's two different ways to measure it. You can measure it with, you can measure the outside walls and windows, but that's not very accurate. The best way to measure it, I would say, is you take electric heat emitters, you stick them in the middle of the room, probably prop them up on stands so that you're not going to lose any heat to the room below. So that then they're like deemed to be 100% efficient. Because they're given 100% of their energy off of the room. The heat can't go any other place. So then you would just stick like a BTU meter on all these heat emitters in the house. And then over like a period of 2 to 3 weeks, you would measure the delta T, the difference in temperature inside and out in the weather pattern, and then get the baseline for what the heat mass is.
What can I do to maintain?
That would be more. But
what can I do with these things?
See, that
I can't do that.
The problem comes in. Okay, this is the reason why I came up with this. It's called frustration. When I was building fast cars, I had a stopwatch. And I use that stopwatch to take the 5 different components of a car and make a fast car on the racetrack. Cornering, braking, acceleration, aerodynamics, driving the proper line. It all came together with a stopwatch. And that measured how good I was at a race car engineer, or a race car designer, or whatever. This, right here. How efficient is this system compared to one I designed 2 years ago? No, neither does anybody else. So if no one can tell me how efficient this design is, how the hell can I make it the proper improvements to make it better?
How can a person practicing new invention who is still in the office use your equation and compare and use and bring you some knowledge?
So there's two different ways. I have two. One is I'm working with Dr. Tom Butcher, and he wants to do, they've done this electric resistance test before to measure heat loss in houses, with the electric heat engine. So he wants to do a study, like maybe with NYSERDA or something. He said that he would write the grant proposal. He did the paperwork, because I told him, since I'm not college educated, I'm really probably not very good at writing grant papers. But he would do all that, and then we'd do like a project together and measure the overall efficiency of houses in a small scale. You're going to get more accuracy, but you're going to have a smaller sample because it's a pain in the ass to do. Then you have the U.S. Green Building Council. They're collecting something like 40,000 data sets a year. And they're making these guys give them the heat loss. They're making them give them what the equipment is. So they got to write a description of what the building's like. If I could take a large data set like that, the larger the data set, the less accuracy you need per unit. Because you can start to see trends. If you can see you throw it into a computer program, you can say, okay, we have 1,000 units, we have 1,000 systems that are radiant heating over here and 1,000 that are hot air over there. And you can say, aha, on average, the radiant heating systems are performing 10% better than the hot air system. So you can start to see trends that way, trends of different styles of installation, and pick the ones that work the best. And that's basically what it's for, to send the engineers in the right direction. So rather than trying to build equipment, that can function in a government passive security resolve called AFUE. Maybe they're built equipment that can function in your house. That's what my goal is. I want engineers to build equipment that functions more efficiently in your home. Not for some laboratory test, but in your home. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to take it out to the real world.
Factors, changing the boilers, you can tell what's effective and what isn't. And that's what he wanted to do.
infiltration rate of the building too. So it's the pressure of the building and how much air is being lost in or out of the building. There's a few different factors. Solar gain. Solar gain we could measure by measuring daytime information and nighttime information and comparing the two. We can factor out for the solar gain.
How are we going to make this angel stuff?
Yeah, that was my question.
I'm $20,000 in the hole. Right now, all I care about is saving my business.
If you want to sell that as an event, then you got to make it into the product that people are going to be selling. That's the bottom line.
I'll think about that after I do this business. I'm not going any further. I can't. Because my problem is, if I was to actually find a solution, I would go for it, and then if I go for it, I'll lose my house before I...
Can you use this equation to claim efficiency for the systems that you install in your business?
Yes.
So there is, there's value added for your business. Right?
Oh, absolutely. I know how good of a job I did in building a heating system. It tells me the efficiency of the heat emitter. It tells me the whole package. Efficiency of the fuel I use, oil, gas,
so you're already bringing the product to market.
It puts it all together. It's the stopwatch of the industry. That's what it is. It's the stopwatch of the industry. That's the whole package coming together. All the different components all coming together and how they perform together. And that's what I need to know if I'm going to be top-notch heating designer. And that's why I developed it. How can I be top-notch unless I have the ability to measure how efficient the system is. I can't even claim to be a top-notch heating designer unless I can first measure the performance of this, the efficiency of this.
So the heating efficiency equation is giving you what might be considered a sustainable competitive advantage for your business.
Yeah. Well, it's the cost of doing it doesn't really make sense for me to just do it for myself or for one building. What I'm doing it for is what you want to do is with the information that you learn, you want to publish material that you can sell to others. Like, for instance, if you figure out that a low-temperature radiant heating system with modulating condensing boiler is much more efficient than a geothermal system with hot air ducts, and you can prove it out with the overall efficiency, then what you do is you got people who are adjusting the price of the radiant heating system, also in the sale of the house. Oh, this guy has low-temperature modulating condensing boiler hooked to radiant heating in his house. Therefore, his fuel bills, on average, are going to be less, so the value of his house becomes more. So it kind of, you do, like, if you did 20 data sets and you figured out that package was better than the other package, then you publish that information. Now everybody in the country, 2,000 people, can start picking the right system to install and save money and fuel. Does that make sense? So in other words, you know, it's a few that you only need to study a few to serve the advantage of the many.
And how would you capture the advantage of the
thoughts to it. And I'm trying to figure it out.
Online service or something like that.
Probably, yes. There's a lot of creativity you can get to with online. You can sell reports, you can sell information, you can sell training programs. And probably my thought was to set up a non-profit organization that would take donations from people. And then we would publish reports and such. But I really see this as best for like a non-profit project. And, you know, some stuff you would sell, but you'd also take donations. So people just got to come up and say, hey, I really care about the planet. I want to see heating systems be more energy efficient. And I know that if I donate some money to this project and these studies are done, that it's going to make a difference. So some of it, you got some money coming from that angle, and then you got some money coming from speedometer or the device you can put in the house and tell how efficiently, you know, whether you change out your units, that could be immediate. That could probably design. That would be easy to design. That would be a part to the sell. But it won't be using my, it would be very valuable to people. But it won't be using my plumbing. And that would be stealing another guy's idea. Well, I mean, it is this, it isn't.
Nobody else wants to go.
You want to go there?
I'm going. I'll go with you. All right.
second chance.
Thank you very much.